with Aaron, Polly, and Andrew.
I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
And I am Andrew.
Well, we are back from our post Funny Book Awards hiatus. Paul, Paul was out sick last week, and so we took that week off so that we could take care of our dear sweet Paul.
Yes, everyone here, great bedside manner.
Yeah, I made him chicken soup, and Andrew, applied cold compresses to his forehead.
Frequently they took turns on the sponge bath. So
yeah, and Wayne wore the nurse's uniform, with the little white skirt and shoes. Yeah,
I mm-hmm. kept a close eye on his temperature, checked it frequently, anally, of course.
Yeah, of course, as you do.
Most accurate way to check it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I'm glad you're feeling better now, Paul.
Yes, I am. I'm feeling better. I went to the movies this week. I read some comics, and I'm excited to be here talking about these things with you guys.
Can I just say, as much as I enjoy podcasting with you guys, I really enjoy the weeks that we don't podcast, in that I get to read whatever I want to read rather than what's new. I mean, I have read so much old stuff and just have really enjoyed it. Just saying.
So what old stuff have you read besides go on.
Well, I did reread Civil War II. Mm. I read three trades of Miles Morales Ultimate Spider-Man. And a number of other things. I mean, I just a ton of just archival reading stuff that I'd read Civil War II before, but I wanted to go back to it because I had started off on the Ultimate Spider-Man reads, and this was after Miles Morales joined the 616.
I was about to ask that if you were thinking before.
Yeah, I really didn't. After. I really didn't read much of him after he joined the mainstream Marvel universe, I have a problem with the Ultimate Spider-Man line because it's hard to understand where to jump into the story, because they keep renumbering the series. And I had that trouble with a number of things, like trying to read all the Red Hulk books, is just a real crazy to try and figure out. You got to look and see what year the series is in and, just kind of understand the numbering. But anyway, there was the reference in like the second or third trade where it refers to Civil War II and the image of Miles having killed Captain America. I'm like, oh, yeah, I kind of remember reading Civil War II. So I went and reread that and, I walked away with it higher degree of appreciation than I did the first time I read it. The first time I read it, I was like, it really didn't nail it like Civil War did. And now I'm like, I think it was kind of on point. I think it actually did a really strong job. So
I don't think anyway. I've ever read Civil War II.
It's a good read, and it's beautifully drawn. It's a whole lot of Tony Stark just kind of losing his mind because we're profiling people. And, doesn't like the idea that we're, incarcerating people for things that they haven't done yet.
So real quick, we're okay with registering people who just are born a certain way, but not against arresting them for – that's where he draws the line, is arresting them for future crime. Okay, got it.
That's correct. Got it. Tony Stark, a little inconsistent. But yeah, it's a good book. I enjoyed it.
Very good.
But I'm back on the horse. I'm back reading, new comics. So
only requested you read one comic this week.
And I did. I read that one comic. I haven't read any other new comics this week.
Neither have I. But, yeah.
We've got. But I did see a new movie. So there's that.
But, I mean, I thought we were just going to talk about the season finale or series finale of Cobra Kai. That I'm ready to talk about.
Okay, so thank you for bringing that up. I was so confused when I went to the theater yesterday to watch Captain America, Brave New World.
Trailer.
And I saw the trailer for the new Karate Kid movie. And I'm like, wait a minute. Isn't there a Netflix series that's going on right now? So I was a little confused by that. And my brain finally sorted it out. Oh, this is a movie that takes place after the Cobra Kai series.
I would assume so. You know, they haven't said there's much of a connection. You know, Cobra Kai has been on for
ever
now five seasons, I think.
Yeah.
And
having debuted on the failed YouTube subscription service.
Yeah, right? YouTube TV or YouTube Plus, something.
Yeah, stupid. Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's I mean, it's a, for what it's worth, it's a horribly acted yet still fun show. So yeah, so that ended this past week, and now they're hyping this Karate Kid Legends movie that has
which I'm really interested in because it's got Jackie Chan in it.
Yeah, and Ralph Macchio.
Yeah.
But you know, if anybody had ever told me that Ralph Macchio would still be a thing, you know, 40 years later, guys.
I mean, for what it's worth, he wasn't for 35 years of it. Right. Yes.
You
know?
Yeah.
Exactly. Ouch. Right. Exactly right. He was not a continuous force for 40 years. He took a 35-year hiatus.
Yes.
Oh man, that is rough but true. Okay. I just every time I see Ralph Macchio on the screen, I'm like, seriously? Really? We're gonna keep doing this?
Come on, yeah, Aaron.
At least one more time.
I mean, don't be a hater, Aaron. Come on.
Well, I mean, and I do like Cobra Kai, though I think I'm two seasons behind. But I do like Cobra Kai, but I think it's really got a lot more to do with the other guy that I like that show.
Yeah, William Zabka.
God, I like Zabka.
Yeah.
I like him a lot. I like him a lot.
You always like the bad boys.
That's right. That's right. But, you know, I saw the preview for The Accountant 2 yesterday. Yes. And, you know, I'm sitting there going, my God, I forgot. I've never seen The Accountant. So I came home after watching Brave New World yesterday and saw The Accountant because it's streaming on Max. That movie's fantastic.
It is. That's why they're making the sequel. You know, it found new life.
No. I'm going to stop you right there. You do not get to say, well, that's why they're making a sequel, because it's so excellent. No. Because they make tons of sequels to shitty movies all the time. Okay. All the time. I mean, there were Marvel movies after The Eternals, for Christ's sake. Okay. So,
Eternals, saying. Good, but still, moving on. but here's the thing. There was an 8-year break between the first account and the second account.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I got to tell you, I think that's one of the best written action films I've ever seen. I just can't get over how well written that movie is.
My question is, why did
I can't get over how wrong. I can't get over how wrong Andrew was just then saying Eternals was good.
Yeah, I mean, you'll never come around, Wayne. Some people never see the light. But why did it take them so long to make a second Accountant movie?
That's a good question. I don't know. Maybe it's just because Ben didn't have time.
Maybe.
But boy, I really enjoyed it.
And the second one looks actually really good.
Yeah.
The Punisher and Batman, and it's the Punisher Batman movie.
Well, and it looks like you're going to get, you know, Affleck and Barenthal all through the movie versus, you know, just a little bit of Barenthal. Yeah. So, you know, that looks great.
Well, for just a moment when it started, I was like, is this a Punisher movie? And then I saw Ben Affleck, and I was like, oh, wait, no.
Look, Batman and the Punisher team up.
As usual, me being out of the loop, have no idea what The Accountant is.
Well, so The Accountant is a Ben Affleck movie in which he plays a neurodivergent man.
Assassin. Yeah.
Yeah. Who is the forensic accountant for all the bad guys. Right. So, you know, he's working for the cartels and, you know, the mob, et cetera, and, you know, cleaning up their books, doing forensic audits, that kind of thing. But he's also, you know, trained assassin. Because his apparently special ops covert intelligence father, who served in the military, made sure that nobody could take advantage of his autistic son. So it's just great. It's just a fantastic origin story woven throughout the length of the movie. And I like how he's just got a very definitive code. It's a superhero movie in a lot of respects. I dug the hell out of it and can't believe it's been that I'd completely forgotten about the movie and had never seen it. So
good stuff. I don't remember it doing super well at the box office when it came out.
Same. Yeah. And I think that's why I forgot about it. You know, it kind of came out. It feels like it came out in that flurry of Affleck movies like The Town and other Boston films that I just kind of got lost in.
Yeah, I definitely saw it streaming. I didn't see it in the theater, but a couple of years later, I saw it on some streaming service and really, really dug it.
And I'll stop life on streaming, and that's why it's, you know, they're bringing back for a sequel. I think it was just one of those that the in theaters it did fine and got good reviews, but on streaming it really took off.
So the last trailer I'll talk about that looks fantastic to me is The Amateur with Rami Malek. I think that looks
I don't know. I'm not sold on that. I have Rami Malek issues.
Well, same. But I did like him in the Freddie Mercury documentary or Freddie Mercury biopic.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't know. He strikes me as, I just don't like looking at him, frankly. he's just got a weird face and I don't like it.
it's certainly, you know, an alt face, if you will, you know.
Yeah.
I think Amateur looks really good. The Amateur looks really good. Yeah.
So before we talk about the movie itself, Captain America: Brave New World, you know, we wanted to acknowledge that we are recording this podcast in February, which is African American History Month here in the United States. And, you know, we thought it would be just kind of appropriate to acknowledge some of our favorite African American creators and comic book characters throughout the years in celebration of this month.
Can I ask a quick question?
Sir, yes, sir.
Does this podcast, because I'm not involved in the accounting, do we receive any funding from the federal government?
We do not.
Okay, go on. We can continue. Go on.
Yes, we're good.
No, Andrew, I can answer that for you. We receive no funding from anyone.
Paul's credit card is where we receive our funding.
From a generous stipend from the Paula Ponte Foundation.
Exactly. Those podcast hosting, that podcast hosting doesn't come free.
So, you know, one of my favorite creators who happens to be African-American is Keith Pollard. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with him or not, but, you know, huge Marvel artist, particularly in the 80s and 90s. He did a run on Thor, you know, legacy numbering like 285 to 326, I think. But he was right there in that zone of issue 300 where they were doing this fantastic Ring series, you know, sort of based on, you know, Wagner's The Ring. And it was just exquisitely illustrated. I mean, like, you know, something you'd want in a great big, you know, absolute edition. His illustrations of the Midgard serpent and, you know, all the different gods and whatnot. It was just amazing and fantastic. And then he's got this other great run on the Fantastic Four, and he was all over the pages of Marvel Comics back in the day. And he has one of those art styles that really moved beyond the house style that Marvel had set up back in the day and really kind of became its own thing. And it was just intricately illustrated, popped off the page. It was just fantastic, and I've always admired Keith Pollard's artwork, and I've only gotten to meet him once at a comic book convention years and years ago, and just a fantastic artist.
You know, I was actually going to talk about Dwayne McDuffie on this podcast, because he's so, you know, he passed away in 2011, but he, you know, his legacy between Milestone and the Bruce Timm, Paul Dini, you know, universe of superhero animation and Static Shock and Ben 10. I mean, the guy just, you know, he has such a lasting impact. And little known fact, also the half brother of Keegan-Michael Key.
I did not know that.
I didn't know that either.
Did not know that.
So, you know, he has such a lasting impact, but I thought I'd just kind of talk a little bit about an unsung hero, or I shouldn't call it, you know, an unsung creator. And that's Daryl Banks.
Yeah.
You know, friend of the podcast, Ron Mars. We love Ron, you know, quite a bit. He's one of the few people I actually still follow on Twitter. But, you know, I think one of the things that gets forgotten is that Daryl Banks is the co-creator of a lot of characters that you know, we even ourselves just talk about Ron Mars as the writer, but, you know, visually, you know, he also co-created Kyle Rayner and Parallax and Dr. Light and a number of great DC characters that, you know, we still love to this day. I mean, Kyle Rayner is, you know, despite what they've done to his character in DC, Still one of my favorite, you know, comic book characters, one of my favorite Green Lanterns. And, you know, Parallax, they still bring Parallax on mothballs every once in a while when they need a major Green Lantern villain. In fact, you know, up until then, they really only had Sinestro as kind of the iconic Green Lantern villain. And, you know, Parallax now, these creators, Ron Mars and Darryl Banks, you know, have, you know, co-created another definitive Green Lantern villain that just, you know, that has changed that character, you know, so significantly over the years. And so, you know, I still honestly regularly revisit the Emerald Twilight storyline, because I feel like that was a big turning point in the DC universe that still affects things to this day. And, you know, Darryl Banks's contributions there are definitely immeasurable.
Yeah, very good call outs, Paul. I mean, you mentioned two people that I had on my list. I'm going to give a shout out to friend of the show that we haven't talked to in a long time, Raven Gregory. I absolutely love the Fly series. And there were other books that he did that I loved, but for some reason, that series just resonated with me so much. And it's not just because he quoted me on the back of the first trade, but that helps.
I forgot about that. Was that for the... What was that? The Hunger
or so, the Waking? Fly. That was Fly.
Fly. Yeah. That's right. I gotta repurchase my copy of Fly from Xenoscope.
Oh, I have that framed.
Yeah, I keep mine on a shelf, and that one because that's the only comic I've been quoted on.
That's awesome. And I remember, I certainly don't follow Raven Gregory's career as much as I used to, but recently I was actually looking at revisiting his Beyond Wonderland, or, you know, just his Wonderland series, and there's just so much. You know, it's all available digitally, and a lot of it's frankly available via Comixology Unlimited. But man, yeah, Raven, that is a good shout out, Wayne.
Well, kind of go along with Paul's Dwayne McDuffie, I was going to go with Dennis Cowan for, you know, similar reasons, for, you know, his kind of work with creating Milestone, you know, bringing more visibility to Black creators, his work with Static Shock, you know, his work with The Question over in DC. So my pick was definitely Dennis Cowan.
Strong choice. In terms of heroes or characters, and this is a little on the nose, but Luke Cage is my choice for favorite hero in this category. I respond to so much about Luke Cage is how in the modern Marvel books, he fully embraces, and when I say he, I mean the writers fully embrace everything that came before, you know, like Tiara wearing Luke Cage with the yellow shirt. I mean, I love that. And I love, you know, when Bendis is writing him and, you know, referring to, you know, the old outfit. I get a super kick out of that. But I also enjoy how he's very topical. You know, that character, you know, comments a lot on what's going on in the culture. It just really providing, you know, a terrific voice for it. And I love his arc. I mean, he's really, you know, he's gone from being a hero for hire in the 70s and 80s to, you know, having led the Avengers to, you know, having been mayor of New York City. I love that, you know, he's married with a kid and he's all about his family. And I just there's just so many aspects to the Luke Cage character, and he's just so matured and multifaceted. And, you know, a lot of characters, regardless of race, can't say that in their books, that they've had an arc. A lot of them are kind of stuck in, you know, that second act and just never really, you know, change and grow from their original concept. And you can't say that about Luke Cage. He's always changing. And I love that about him.
Sweet Christmas.
Mine's a little off the wall because there are all of these major characters that, you know, lead their own books and such. But I've always resonated with Cloak from Cloak and Dagger.
Yeah.
I just those early issues of the two of them on the streets being forced, drugs being forced on them. They're just such interesting characters And Cloak in particular, he struggles with his powers. He struggles with the fact that his powers can drive people insane. And just this need for Dagger just to keep him sane is something that I've always just really enjoyed in books.
Those are both good picks, guys. You know, growing up, I had a whole bunch of Captain America and Falcon books from the 1970s that I would read and reread that were dog-eared and falling apart. And I really liked the Sam Wilson from those 1970s books in there. You know, he was kind of dealing with being caught between two worlds, between, you know, Captain America's world and you know, the world of Harlem where he lived and his people lived. And, you know, he worked as a social worker, which I found fascinating. And obviously, since then, he's gone on. You know, there have been periods since the 70s where he's kind of disappeared from the landscape. And then obviously recently, though, he's become a big part of the MCU and comic books as well. But I've always, since a young child, I've always enjoyed the Sam Wilson Falcon.
You know, and we'll come back and talk a little bit more about the differences in the character between, you know, movie and comic book. But a strong choice. I thought real hard about Sam Wilson, particularly given the fact that the movie came out this week. Paul?
You know, for me, Sam Wilson is not a character I really appreciated much until the movies. And I mean, it's not like I wasn't familiar with him in comics. I was, but it was just not a character I gravitated to. But one character that I did always appreciate, a Marvel character, was Black Panther, or is still Black Panther. You know, what I think one of the things that really latched on to me about that character early on in my life was that, you know, in addition to being this king, right, you know, that, which is so different than any other comic character that I was reading, you know, as a child. They also introduced so much science fiction into that world of Wakanda and into that character, you know, even at an early stage. You know, you kind of had this super science-y thing that Marvel was good at the time, right? You had Nick Fury, you had some of the super science-y type characters, Fantastic Four, and, you know, Black Panther having all that, plus being a superhero, plus being this king of this kingdom, it's something that I latched onto pretty early on, and you know, he was a character that I think sometimes creators find hard to get right. But on the flip side, you know, some creators absolutely did, and we had some pretty solid runs on that character, you know, throughout his history. And so, yeah, I mean, I think for me, you know, that character was just he's just someone I've always latched onto and always appreciated, and his presence in the Marvel universe is distinct and different than any other character in the Marvel universe, and I've always appreciated that about him.
You know, if we were to put money on who Paul was going to pick, I would have lost the bet, because I would have put money that he was going to pick Blade.
You know, I certainly did think about it, but Blade has had more shitty comics than good ones. So.
That is true, because like Black Panther, Blade is a character that a lot of writers struggle to get right. And yeah. One of mine that I almost picked is another one that's same way, Steel. Steel, yeah. I love Steel back in the Death of Superman storyline and the Reign of Superman. But he's one where writers really struggle.
Yeah.
Some writers just nail the character, and there's been some horrible Steel books, though.
There was a Black Panther ongoing story in the pages of Marvel Comics Presents back in the day. And I remember Gene Colan did the artwork for it. I can't remember who wrote it, but it was Black Panther in South Africa, you know, during apartheid. And it was fantastic. I remember just, you know, every time, every week I'd buy Marvel. That was because that was back when MCP was a weekly. I would just, you know, immediately flip to those pages because I was really enjoying that story. And with the Gene Colan artwork to it, it had just this really sort of horrible grittiness to it. It was really, really a very good story in that.
I miss that era of Marvel Comics Presents. There were some of the best character work on characters in that book. It was back in the days where it would be a flip book where you have four different stories in it. One of them would always be a Wolverine. But there's, like I said, some of the best character work, and you would get those characters that you wouldn't normally get in full books.
Yeah, because back then, you know, what are we talking, the 90s? I don't think Black Panther was ready to sustain his own monthly, but it did such a great job and kind of laid that groundwork for what was to come for Black Panther, you know, in his other stories, because it was just fantastic. I really can't say enough about that run. And, you know, the fact that it was topical with, you know, about apartheid in South Africa. It was good stuff. Well, so, you know, that was four white guys talk about Black History Month. So.
Well, it's talking about Sam Wilson's character and Captain America: Brave New World, right?
Well, right. I'll point out too that, you know, we're talking about some of these older books. They were written by white guys, right? You know,
most of them, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Especially like 1970s Captain America: Falcon. I'm talking about written by white guys, I'm sure.
Yeah, Roy Thomas was a lot of that, I think.
Yeah. So yeah. I mean,
it's Black Panther created by Stan Lee.
Right.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that I really give Stan credit for Black Panther and the era, because I mean, he was limited by some of the things he could do for the character.
Yeah.
But I think that's for me the most iconic. I mean, other than Jonathan Hickman, some of the most iconic runs for me on that character, Black Panther, were by African American creators. Right. Yeah. I think about the Reginald Hudlin Black Panther book. I mean, yes, it was drawn by John Romita Jr., but, you know, I really, yeah, the Marvel Knights stuff, Christopher Priest.
Yep.
Also, I mean, those were just great runs on that character.
I just think it's important to acknowledge that's been a continuum where, you know, back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, those white creators were doing edgy things by using black characters. But, you know, and then finally we progressed to a point where you had more and more black creators. And I think it's probably at the best it's ever been currently.
Yeah, agreed.
Although still not, you know, probably where it needs to be, but still, it's a continuum.
Yep.
Yeah.
And, I want to call out that one of the characters I mentioned, Steel, was first written by not a white guy, but a white woman.
Mm-hmm.
Louise Simonson.
Yeah. Louise Simonson.
So the movie, let me tell you about my my initial disappointment walking into Brave New World. Saw it in the theater. I got an email from Regal Theaters Thursday afternoon, and it was talking about all the special snacks they were having specifically for Brave New World. So I'm just going to read you. To help celebrate Captain America: Brave New World, they are going to have Shield Crunch Caramel Popcorn, Freedom Fire Bite Spicy Popcorn Chicken, and Raging Red Cherry Icy or True Blue Raspberry Icy, available for a limited time. So I walked in Thursday night very excited for my caramel popcorn because I love caramel. And they didn't have it out yet. They're like, no, we're not going to have it till Friday night. And so I kind of wept throughout the trailers over my loss.
I'm surprised you didn't Hulk out, you know, that, you know.
Yeah.
All of a sudden your purple pants didn't split open.
So actually, there was a happy ending, though, because Friday after work, got off work, drove immediately to theater, immediately bought two bags of caramel popcorn and left the theater. So eventually got it.
I mean, that is hardcore that you went back.
Well, to be fair, my place of work is only about a 5-minute drive from the theater. Oh, okay. So it wasn't like it was going to the far side of town or anything.
OK.
Not really on the way home, but not too far on the way home. So we kind of talked about trailers. What are your guys' initial thoughts about Brave New World?
Well, number one, this was my first time to see a film in one of the new AMC Dolby cinemas.
Dolby's legit for sure.
I mean, wow. The sound was amazing. I mean, the chair shaking like during the dogfight scene at the, you know, towards the end of the movie. It blew my hair back. It was pretty darn cool. I would have liked to have seen Top Gun Maverick in a theater like that. It was pretty crazy, which explained why my ticket for 1 p.m. on a Friday afternoon was $15. I was like, why is this so expensive? You know, but apparently that's why. It was good. Yeah. I enjoyed seeing it in that environment, and I'm looking forward to seeing other, you know, big special effects movies in a similar environment.
Yeah, frankly, I enjoy Dolby Cinema more than I enjoy IMAX. I think you know, like the AMC IMAX.
Uh-huh.
Because Dolby Cinema has like the nice seats and
yeah.
I mean it's a better movie watching experience, I find.
Yeah. It was cool. It was cool.
Well, yeah, living where I am, there's really no options. We saw it in what's called RPX, which is not quite IMAX.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's better than a regular theater. But it's not anything like IMAX or Dolby, but it was fine.
Well, I think three of us have seen the movie. Am I correct on that, Wayne, that you haven't seen it?
You are correct. I have okay. not had a chance yet. I plan on going today.
Okay. I think my first comment about the movie is they don't help you in some of the backstory. Like, there's all this reference to Celestial Island.
Yeah.
And I had to dig into the deep recesses of memory of having seen Eternals, because I have done everything I can to sublimate and eliminate that memory. And
that's what I was going to say. I was like, if you enjoyed Eternals more, it would have popped right to mind like it did for me.
Well, the one thing that I will say, even more so than Eternals, yes, there is a reference to Eternals, and it would be helpful to have seen that prior to this. The one movie, if you only have time to see one movie before you see Captain America Brave New World.
See The Accountant.
See The Accountant, or more appropriately, see the Ed Norton Incredible Hulk movie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, fair.
It is 100% a sequel to that movie.
Yeah.
In almost every way.
Yeah,
in
the scope. Don't let them throw you. They replaced one of the actors. They replaced Thunderbolt Ross, but it is a sequel.
Yeah. And well, and you know, since we're going to talk about Ed Norton's 2008 The Incredible Hulk, I understand that this is a Red Hulk movie. Seemed a little strange to not have some kind of Bruce Banner in this movie. It just seemed a little.
I found that odd. Like, you know, with every reference to the Incredible Hulk and these are, I mean, this is straight up an Incredible Hulk movie sequel, but with Falcon instead of Bruce Banner. It did feel odd to that Bruce was nowhere near it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, don't you expect if Bruce had been in it, then we would all have been expected this giant, you know, Green Hulk, Red Hulk, you know.
Oh, yeah. No, I think you could have done some kind of cameo thing, much as they did Bucky. Get him on the phone. Hey, we got a Red Hulk problem.
Yeah. And that is something I want to see on screen is Red Hulk versus Green Hulk.
Same. Well, and I think they have to. I think now that you've got a Red Hulk out there, you're going to have to.
I barely remember anything from that old Norton Hulk other than I remember the fight with the guy that eventually becomes Abomination.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It was like a screen test for Captain America.
Right.
The way he was bouncing around the Hulk and fighting him.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I got to say seeing the Hulk before this would be certainly helpful. I have kind of mixed feelings about the movie. I found that there were parts that were kind of stiff and forced and kind of dragged on, like that limo scene. It didn't feel like the chemistry was there to me. But then there were other parts that I really enjoyed this movie. I love this that 3 minutes Sebastian Stan was on the screen. Mm-hmm. Love that part.
One of the problems I have with the MCU version of Sam Wilson is that in a lot of respects, he's indistinguishable from Rhodey, right? You know, they're both, you know, African-American. They're both soldiers, you know, and indistinguishable from Steve Rogers in, you know, that they've got the soldier background. So you don't really have a different type of Captain America as Sam Wilson, other than the fact that he's not a super soldier. And, you know, he seems an awful lot like Rhodey, except, you know, he doesn't wear the armor.
He's better looking than Rhodey. Let's start with there. He's much more attractive than Rhodey.
I do like Anthony Mackie, but I wish that we had somebody who wasn't a military guy in that role. I would have liked him to be a social worker.
Yeah.
Right?
And that's a change because, you know, Anthony Mackie, Sam Wilson, was a soldier first, I think. Right. Yeah, and then became a social worker, a counselor of some type after he got out of the military. Because, you know, they find him initially.
Yeah, he was working with disabled vets,
VA.
Right.
Right, at the VA. But, yeah, he does, with that soldier background they give him, the MCU does kind of, and especially in this movie, they really kind of relied on that or emphasized his soldier background. It kept coming up, you know, about being a soldier and, you know, doing your duty for the country and all that. So they really, the writers leaned on it in this movie very heavily, which did kind of make him a little less distinguishable.
Yeah. I would have liked that additional depth to his character. And I also miss the characters that we met in his TV show.
We get one of them.
Well, Joaquin.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I found Joaquin rather forgettable from the original show.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh, okay. I think I remember this guy. You know, and that's the problem with so much of this Marvel content is that, you know, it's easy to forget some of it.
Well, there's so much of it.
Right. Right. Yeah, that wasn't me disparaging, you know, Falcon and Winter Soldier. It was just that there's an awful lot of it. And it's been a while. Yeah. Right.
Well, and to be fair, the Isaiah Bradley character was introduced in that TV show. And
right.
His importance in the life.
And I absolutely remembered him.
Yeah.
You know,
of course
that he was, you know, sticky in my memory. And that's another thing that I wish we had gotten to spend more time with him. I wish he'd been more of an activated character, you know,
because that actor is very good.
Fantastic.
I love the guy who plays Isaiah Bradley.
Yeah. I really enjoy him on screen. Would have liked to have seen, you know, him having, you know,
more agency.
Exactly. Yeah. I would have enjoyed that. But, you know, instead of him just, you know, being the guy that we're fighting for. Right.
Yeah. He was the motivator.
Right. But, I heard a lot of really negative reviews going into this movie. And I was like, oh, man, I really want to enjoy this movie. And I am happy to say I did. I liked most of the movie. I think there are problems with it. I don't think any of the reshoots with Giancarlo Esposito, I don't think that helped the movie at all. He wasn't apparently in the movie until reshoots.
Really?
And
part of the reshoots.
Yeah. Entirely. I don't feel like any of that really helped the movie. I think what would have helped the movie was instead of them telling me the leader's origin story, had they shown it.
Sure.
Right? I understand they were trying to keep it under 2 hours, but I think there was probably some other things they could have trimmed.
And Juan Carlos, just to make sure I'm not confused, he plays Sidewinder, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. I mean, I did really enjoy the part where Sidewinder ambushes Falcon. I really enjoyed that scene. It was fantastic. But I thought that added a little bit to the movie.
And I've heard some fussing about the big dogfight thing at the end of the movie, but I really enjoyed that. I thought that was the you know, Red Hulk fight were the standouts for me. And let's just say, no complaints about the CGI in this film. For me, the Red Hulk CGI blew off the screen. I mean, it was explosive. I freaking loved it. I really
did. I agree with you with the Red Hulk CGI. And I guess I don't know for sure if my issue is CGI, if it was a practical effect. I haven't looked it up. What they did with the leader's head with those lesions and bumps.
I would prefer a more comic accurate leader than what they did. I did not like his mushy head.
Correct.
Apparently that was part of the original movie and was changed during reshoots. And I think that's my main issue with the movie. Now, I will say, I actually quite enjoyed Brave New World. I thought it was fun. I thought it was good. You know, it is very much dependent on Anthony Mackie's charisma.
Mm-hmm. And he's great on screen. He really holds the camera.
You know, I enjoyed it, and I did enjoy the callbacks to the Incredible Hulk. I did enjoy the introduction of Adamantium. You know, I overall enjoyed the film, and how for the most part up until like the last half hour, give or take, it does try to ground itself in a little bit of reality, like you know, trying to call back to the Winter Soldier. It's very much trying to ape the Winter Soldier in feel, just without, frankly, the direction, you know, of fight sequences is nowhere near as good as what, you know, the yeah. Russos yeah. had in Winter Soldier. Yeah. But I do feel like the reshoots, for me, I don't know if they helped the film or hurt the film, but they felt obvious to me.
Oh, yeah.
So like you said, the Giancarlo Esposito stuff, you know, like felt disconnected from the rest of the movie. Apparently the widow character who was introduced as, you know, like this other female character that, I don't know, like she was like 4 feet tall.
Yeah.
It was,
yeah.
Like, why? Like, so short?
Like, why? I thought she was great though. She was so great. Angry.
But apparently she was part of the reshoots too. So that, you know, they had these things that were shoehorned in that, you know, in retrospect, I'm like, did they do anything to add or take away from the movie?
Yeah.
But you know, but they also removed the whole Serpent Society stuff. They had, I think, a wrestler playing one of the characters and stuff like that. And that entirely got removed. So I'm curious to see how this movie has evolved, because they basically, it sounds like, reshot most of the movie.
The whole damn
thing. Yeah, it was Seth Rollins.
Yeah, it was Seth freaking Rollins.
I would like to see like the original cut, just so I could compare it to the, because I enjoyed this Brave New World, but I would be curious to see what it was like in its original form.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. How does Bucky, because we see Bucky in this, and he's running for Congress, correct?
Which is weird, but okay, yeah.
How does he go from running from Congress now to working with the Thunderbolts in 3 months?
Well, we'll find out in 3 months.
There's gonna be some reshoots to tell you that story.
Like, I don't know how that evolves. Is he like their minder? Is he like the hero they put on the team to keep all the villains in line? I don't know, but yeah. that was a question I had.
I don't recall. The ending of Falcon and Winter Soldier, was he running for Congress then?
I don't remember.
I don't recall that was part of the story. So I felt like that was new information on screen. And like, that seems an odd choice for a guy who used to be a Soviet assassin.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like that's going to come up.
I think he was pardoned. I think he actually was. I think that was from one of the things he got, you know, when he came in from the Soviet Winter Soldier, right?
Right.
I think he was eventually pardoned, but and then I did enjoy the complexity of plot. I enjoyed Harrison Ford. What did you guys think about his
performance? I really enjoyed. I thought for sure I was going to see Harrison Ford just kind of walking through this movie.
Yeah.
But I was very pleased, not just with him being, you know, the model for the, you know, crazy Red Hulk, but also the depth we got in his performances about and with Betty.
Yeah.
I very much enjoyed seeing that more tender side. And I enjoyed, you know, you spend some time in the movie going, okay, this is he a bad guy? Is he a good guy?
He's just a guy.
Yeah. And I enjoyed the moral ambiguity of him, right? You know, that he wasn't all one thing. I kind of dug that about it. I thought it was a really strong performance, and it seemed energized, whereas a lot of what I saw from him in the recent Indiana Jones film was not. He seemed sleepy in the Indiana Jones movie, and this one he seemed like he was awake. I saw a great
Ford. Sorry, I didn't mean to talk over you. Go ahead.
I saw a great, you know, junket interview with him, and the interviewer said, you know, when you're doing the green screen stuff and, you know, the CGI modeling, do you feel a little ridiculous pretending you're the Red Hulk? You know, is that embarrassing? And Harrison Ford leans forward and goes, "That's what the money's for." And I was like, "That's a great answer."
Yeah, I saw him in an interview where he was talking about, you know, all the Marvel movies, and he's like, "I decided I needed to get me a piece of that."
Yeah, you know, other than Indiana Jones, I feel like the last 5 years of Harrison Ford have been my favorite 5 years of Harrison Ford.
Well, he's great on 1923.
He's great on 1923. He's amazing in that Apple show Shrinking.
Yeah, I don't watch that.
I've not seen that.
It's so Shrinking is from the creators of Ted Lasso.
Okay.
primarily Brett Goldstein, the guy who plays Roy Kent, who's also a co-creator of Ted Lasso.
Oh, is this the different the psychiatrists that go to each like there's the older
Jason right. Siegel is a psychiatrist, and it's about him and his family and what he's gone through, and Harrison Ford is like his boss slash best friend, and it is the best Harrison Ford has probably ever been on screen. And and so, you know, between that, I thought his acting was great in Brave New World. He really committed to it in a way that Harrison Ford doesn't often commit to things, but he has in recent years. Between 1923 Shrinking and this, I'm really liking what I'm seeing of this, you know, late in life, because he's 83, I think.
Harrison, but he's going to run for president next
it's term, coming. So.
Oh, God. And what did you guys think about the Thunderbolts trailer?
I think it looks hot.
I don't know. I'm so excited
for Thunderbolts.
Every time I see a new trailer for it, I get more excited.
Same.
They are doing a great job with their trailers because I had no interest in the movie before, you know, the trailers.
I'm excited about the concept and theory of a Thunderbolts movie. I'm a little kind of like Paul. I'm a little on the fence about how the actual execution is going to go.
Well, and the villain seems to be the Void.
Yeah. That concept never worked for me in comics either.
Right. Yeah. No, I do feel you there, but I'm looking forward to this. I think all those characters look great on screen together.
I do too. I mean, here's the thing. I like all of those actors. I like all of those characters, other than obviously, you know, the Ghost and the Taskmaster.
Well,
even though I like both of those actors, I don't feel like they were given much meat to work
with. I understand Taskmaster doesn't make it out of the first fight, so I think you won't have to endure a whole lot of Taskmaster in that movie.
But you know, the introduction of the Sentry, and I don't know, something about I'm going to see it. Obviously, I'm not entirely sold on it, but you know, I much like Captain America: Brave New World, I feel like the strength is in the actors. Even more so than the properties themselves.
Yeah,
Paul. Sentry is one of those characters I absolutely hate, but I love the first appearance of. Like when they did that whole Stan Lee's remembering a character that he made that he forgot. Like that was a little corny, but that miniseries and all of those one shots were really good. And if they had never brought the character back, I would love it.
Paul, do you think you'll enjoy Thunderbolts more than you enjoyed the Eternals?
So I saw the Eternals finally this week.
Good.
I had never seen it before.
Because he was sick.
Yeah, because I was sick. No, it's not good.
No,
it's
not.
You know, I just found it boring.
Like, yeah, it is long. It's
and stupid.
Long. I'm like, where is this going? Like,
it is terrible movie with two really good characters.
Yeah,
you guys. Yeah. Someday you'll come around. You'll come around someday. Maybe. Maybe not Wayne. He'll probably never come around. Yeah. Paul, I have more faith for Paul in here. More hope, anyway.
Yeah. Well, moving. You know, this is a very Marvel-centric podcast today because, you know, we want to talk about one big comic release this week. One World Under Doom, Issue 1, came out this week. Starting, you know, Doom is now the Sorcerer Supreme of the Marvel Universe. He tricked Doctor Strange into basically relinquishing that role to him during the Blood Hunt storyline. And since then, things have been pretty quiet. You know, haven't seen Doom a lot. You know, he's popped up here and there, but not in a material way.
Yeah, and I've only seen him in Spider-Man.
He was in Spider-Man, and that's pretty much it. And, you know, even then, he was only, like, briefly in it. You know, but now we finally see what Doom has been up to and how the heroes are reacting in this, you know, new arc that started today or this week. And so I'm very curious to hear you guys' thoughts on One World Under Doom, Issue 1.
Well, I guess I'll go first. I didn't feel like the heroes had a strong enough reaction. You know, there seems to be this, you know, we'll kind of wait and see sort of attitude in the first half of the book. But I'm, you know, I understand we're building up and, you know, you can't make any big, bold moves because, you know, Doom is clearly prepared and it has, you know, taken several people off the board already. But I think the writing is fine. And, you know, it's the first issue and we're setting up and, you know, we'll see how it goes in the second issue. What I disliked about the book, and I think you guys will be surprised to hear me say this, I had some problems with the artwork. You know, the book is drawn by Dan Silva. Do I have that right?
R.B. Silva.
R.B. Silva, sorry. And while most of the pages look great, there are certain takes on characters that I just cannot abide. For instance, the first time it jumps out at me is Doctor Strange. And Doctor Strange just doesn't look right.
Yeah. The other character that I think I had a big issue with was Reed.
Yeah, agreed. I completely agree. You know, it's the aging mature person, you know, that he seems to have a hard time drawing. And both of them just didn't look correct. And I was like, wow, that it's so weird that he's right on everything else, but just so wrong on key characters and the interpretation of those. But that said, Dr. Doom riding around on a robotic T-Rex who is also wearing a green hood and cloak was pretty awesome. I got to say, I really dug that. So, you know, big ups on that. That won me over in the book.
Yeah, I didn't have as many issues with the art. I did have kind of an issue with the story. Mm-hmm. You know, because this is a 9-issue series, right? Yeah. And in, you know, in this book, the book starts with, like, Doom is trying to – he is eliminating war. He is, you know, free healthcare and education for all. You know, like, he's doing all these, you know, benevolent things. But, like, literally within the span of the first issue, you find out that Doom, you know, has, like, horrible ulterior motives. He's killing people. You know, he's not the benevolent leader that he says he is, which we knew. But it's a 9-issue series, and I feel like that's a reveal that probably could have been held for a few issues, because it would be nice to see the heroes maybe question things a bit. Why are we doing this? He's actually doing a good thing. His motives seem right. Like, it would be nice to see that questioning a little bit. But, like, within the first issue, you basically know Doom. Yeah, no, Doom's still evil, and he needs to be taken down. And it would be nice if they let that sit a bit.
Is he really, though? Because, I mean, he's killing Nazis. And,
fair.
And he's doing wonderful things for the world and only killing the people that don't get in line.
The people that need killing.
Yeah.
Fair point.
Yeah, my only issue story-wise with it was I felt like I missed something when I started.
Same.
Like, it starts right in the middle of Doom is sending out the message that he is now, you know, ruling the world. It felt like there should have been a lead up, an issue zero or something to lead up to that.
A Free Comic Book Day issue or something, right? I mean, it does seem like it was presented without preamble. Even though we've known this series was coming for a while, it just seemed like there should have been a one shot, a zero issue, something out there leading into it.
Yeah, but I enjoyed it, and I enjoy the aspect of Doom is thinking ahead and thinking. Basically figuring out what the heroes are going to do and play it against them. Yeah.
Yeah. I always enjoy Doom as, you know, smarter than everybody else. And, you know, it's usually his ego that takes him down. I'm really curious to see how this plays out because, you know, we know Doom's not going to win. But, you know, I'm getting there is an entertainment factor here that I'm enjoying. I was really having a hard time with the Doctor Strange and the Reed Richards.
But yeah, I mean, obviously we're in at least, you know, for another issue. I enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was well done. And I'm, you know, there's a lot of tie-ins and there's a few that I'm interested in actually picking up. So I like this, you know, obviously Doctor Doom being one of my favorite villainous characters, you know, I mean, and you have him riding a T-Rex, like you said, in the first issue. Like, it feels like
a robot T-Rex wearing a cloak and hood.
it feels like we're going to get a nice, fun crossover here. So I'm definitely on board and hopefully, you know, despite my misgivings on the early reveal, I'm certainly, you know, interested in seeing where the story goes.
And if there is not an action figure T-Rex with cloak and hood with, you know, Dr. Doom to ride him, you know, a set coming out, I'm going to be very upset. I need those things.
You know, there will be. But you know, it'll be like $125 or something crazy.
That's okay. I'm paying with your card.
Oh, fair point. Fair point.
Hey, Paul.
Yes, sir.
What's coming out next week?
Well, next week we actually have the start of Doom Academy. So, you know, that Doctor Strange, you know, is no longer the Sorcerer Supreme and no longer running the Strange Academy. So now you have Doctor Doom running the Academy. And so that actually kicks off next week. Looking forward to that's a tie into One World Under Doom that I'm looking forward to reading. Also from Marvel Comics, you get finally the third issue of Aliens versus Avengers from Jonathan Hickman and S.R. Ribic. It's been
months. So long.
Yeah,
I love that series, but good gravy.
Let's hope it's not, you know, as much of a delay between issues 3 and 4, because it's only a 4-issue series. But damn if it's not taking like half a year to come out.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Now, from Image Comics, we get the latest issue of G.I. Joe. Looking forward to chatting about that with those on the podcast who have good taste. And you know, from DC Comics, that new Gods run from Graham V. Yep. It hits its third issue. I feel like I forgot to read the second issue, so I got to get caught up.
Very good. Well, hey, we want to know what you thought about One World Under Doom, what you thought about Captain America Brave New World. And hey, tell us who your favorite black creators and black heroes are. Give us a shout at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. And if we use your comments on the show, you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek, on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
Well, Paul, I'm so glad you're feeling well so that we could get together and record. And more importantly, that you could edit the podcast. So very exciting time.
No problem. I can do that.
All right, guys. Y'all have a good week.
Catch you later.
Bye.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.